My wife had just delivered our newborn son. He was a day old, and he had been named John Clark Leland Bull, after John Clark of Rhode Island fame and John Leland of Virginia fame. And my wife and newborn son were laying asleep in the hospital room, and I was literally scrunched up over next to a window reading the newspaper by the light of one little slit in the curtain. And there was an article that said that the county commission subcommittee was having a hearing about posting the Ten Commandments. I looked at my watch, and it was about 5 minutes, maybe 5 or 10 minutes until time for this meeting to start. And I jumped up and ran, literally ran across the bridge to the county building, and got there out of breath. The meeting was now a minute or two away from starting. I recognized the name of the sponsor of the bill, and I saw him standing there, and I introduced myself, and we very briefly chatted, and I told him that I was a Baptist minister, and that based on what I read in the paper, that I wasn't sure I liked this idea. I then went out and took a seat in the gallery, and they started having this discussion, and I was just sitting there minding my own business, listening. And then suddenly this county commissioner said, well, there's a Baptist minister here who actually is opposed to this, and as I understand, and I think, you know, maybe we ought to hear from him. And so I was caught totally off guard and stepped up to the microphone and gave them a brief primer on the separation of church and state. There were two different editorials the next day, and both of them credited me with swaying a certain recommendation vote to a no recommendation vote, a neutral vote. It was sent on to the Fuller Commission, and I then prepared remarks to speak against it at the full commission. I said, I have a neighbor who is Buddhist and a neighbor who is Muslim, and they pay taxes in this county the same as I do. And I don't mind you putting up a poster of the Ten Commandments as long as we let everybody put their similar documents up. The next morning, my secretary called me and said that a person had called the church very, very upset, saying that he was in the process of calling all of his friends who had my wife for private music lessons and tell them to pull her out. And a few minutes later, my phone rang, and it was the father who said, I cannot believe that you've done this. I now have more than enough rope to hang you. He said, I love you, and I will be the first person to bring you a truckload of food when you lose your job at your church. And he said that like that was a done deal. My pastor later had a conversation with him and said, whoa, 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 wait a second. We're not getting rid of Brad. This was a very lonely time. I started getting all these nasty phone calls. My wife was teaching at a private school that met in a church facility, and the pastor said that unless they dismissed my wife, terminated her employment, they would not be allowed to continue meeting in their building. Eventually, a parent in the church called a meeting to try to mediate some resolution. And it was a pretty heated meeting. I was asked to leave the room and then was brought back in, and they said, now, we're just going to ask you to write a document, and if you can prove to us that you and Connie are Christians, we will talk to the board about letting her keep her job. And by the way, while Connie got her job back, I was expecting a rock through the window. It never happened. You got a newborn baby, and you know some people are threatening your job. But I was afraid. 2 years later, Brent Walker had come to Knoxville for a meeting of the presentation about the Baptist Joint Committee, and it was standing room only. During the Q&A, I raised my hand and kind of playfully said, Brent, you're saying that if we take money from the government, we're in danger of losing our prophetic voice. Am I understanding you? Yeah. And I said, so my question is, how do pastors maintain their prophetic voice if they're dependent on their congregations for income? Brent looked at a pastor who was sitting nearby and said, so, well, how do you answer that question? He said, well, I know a lot of unemployed pastors. And then Brent looked at me and said, so what's your answer to that, Brad? And I stood up and faced this very large crowd and said, 2 years ago, when separation of church and state was jeopardized in this community, I went way out on a limb And as I recall, I felt pretty alone out there on that limb. I don't remember seeing any of the rest of you out there on that limb with me. In fact, some of you were shaking the limb, telling me to shut up. I think if we're going to talk about separation of church and state, it's one thing to talk about it here in the safety of this room. It's another to actually do something about it when it's threatened.